I want to quickly introduce you to our panelist. Our panelist called What WebGL Would Mean for the Web. And I think we have a nice little group up here. So all the way over there, we have Shana. Shana is an entrepreneur. She had an amazing product called Wild Pockets that got acquired by Autodesk, where she now works. And she's got some really neat demos to show you today. This gentleman right here is Aaron Copeland. He works for Google. I think his job description is to make cool stuff with web technologies or something along those lines. That's what you do anyway. He's done some fabulous stuff and gave a fabulous TED Talk as well. Over here is my friend Mr. Dude. I guess a lot of you hackers know him out there. He is a bit of a badass. And he's done something called 3JS, which really helped elevate WebGL to this whole other place. And speaking of doing that, the plumber, like at the lowest level of this WebGL stack up here, is Ken Russell. He is the WebGL working group chair. So he basically writes the spec itself, and he also hacks on Chrome at Google. We're thrilled to have you here. We definitely want to open it to questions pretty soon, after we give you some flavors of some work. And when you ask questions, feel free to also say if there's anyone you want to have answer that question. And we had a little bit of time to sit and talk before, and one thing we've sort of observed, a little prayer we have for you guys, is that please be crisp and short in your answers, and please not too many statements in it. That's something we've been observing in other panels that has stressed us out a little bit, so we hope that you want to help us do that. One way to be crisp is to do it via Twitter. And so you can tweet a question. I'll be watching the hashtag WebGLSSW there. And if someone asks a particular astute question, you can help bring it to my attention by retweeting it if you want to help amplify. So we're pretty excited about WebGL. It has some potential, we hope. It also faces some issues that we also hope to highlight some of today and basically give you guys a flavor of what it is. So we label this panel as advanced. So I'm going to give a very sort of brief intro to what WebGL is, and then we're hoping to get nice and juicy and geeky and advanced. So WebGL is often talked about in this frame of under this umbrella term HTML5, which is bringing all this new exciting stuff to the web to essentially turn it into this new cool application platform to sort of outgrow this origins as this document delivery mechanism. The really interesting thing about WebGL is that you should be able to deliver hardware accelerated 3D to, you know, your user in a frictionless way, because WebGL capability is basically built into the browser. That means that your user likely already has the hardware and the software they need. So essentially, you could send someone a link to a full immersive 3D experience, whatever that may be, and just have them go straight in and use it, so you don't need to buy a PlayStation or install a bunch of stuff. We think that is the disruptive, you know, potential here that we're super excited about. So to give you a sense of what that is and what could look like, we I now want to turn it over to the panelists to basically introduce their work and show you some demos to give you a flavor of what this is, and then we'll sort of start the more conversational parts. So to start us off is Ken. So take it away, Ken.
Great. Thanks, Henrik. And by the way, Henrik didn't introduce himself, but he's the organizer of the WebGL Camp series that's been going on in Silicon Valley and now nationwide, with the recent one in Miami, was it? Orlando. Yeah. And has been doing WebGL for a while. He's got a pretty cool product out there called Arbrix, which is a community model uploading site, so go check it out. All right, so before any of us begin, I just wanted to point out that all of the slides and links that you're going to see today are available, so don't be scrambling to write down notes or anything. If you just search for WebGL Wiki presentations, these slides are already up there, and we'll make sure that all of the links that you see are archived under the South by Southwest 2012 section. So, when the panel is called WebGL Will Mean for the Web, and I'd like to take a couple of minutes and talk about what WebGL means today for the web, the impact that it has had on the web ecosystem. So, fundamentally, the API gives you access to the graphics hardware that's already in your web browsing device. Now, you can argue whether or not your every web browsing device is going to have a graphics chip in it, but as it turns out, pretty much every smartphone out there can already run OpenGL ES 2.0, which is the standard that WebGL is built on top of, and pretty much every desktop computer that's out there today also has the capability of running this level of graphics. So it means that as graphics drivers evolve, as web browsers evolve, you're going to see this technology pervade pretty much every platform, and that's cool. Now, when the WebGL specification effort began, this was over 2 years ago, probably closer to three, from JavaScript, it wasn't possible to take a bunch of floating point data, which are your vertices of your 3D model, and send them down to the graphics card in any efficient manner, which is a fundamental stumbling block. If you have to assemble your model as a big JavaScript array, which is not densely packed, and then do an upload and a conversion every time you're trying to modify those vertices, it was going to be incredibly inefficient. So the first problem that the WebGL working group had to tackle was, how do you get the data onto the graphics card? And from that came what is called a typed array specification. And as a matter, so this provides two fundamental operations. One is, it lets you work with binary data. So you can download a file off the internet via XML HTTP request and examine the bytes easily from JavaScript. And second and more fundamentally, it lets you upload data quickly to the graphics card. And this has become the standard for manipulating binary data in JavaScript. I'm very proud to say that. Here's a concrete example of what you can do. And this is really the first proof point of showing what the typed arrays can do. Okay, so this is a demo that came from NVIDIA Corporation years and years ago, and it's been ported from C++ to Java and from Java to JavaScript, so it's got a long legacy. But I figure that if this one can run quickly, then you can pretty much generate a lot of vertex data and upload it to the card, because what's going on here, each dot that you see up there, and there's an awful lot of them, is actually computed from scratch in JavaScript every frame. So there's no retention of geometric data from frame to frame. It's showing if you were doing a big skinned model or some other advanced graphics technique, could you just push vertices down raw to the card quickly? And the answer is yes, you can. This isn't even running as quickly as it does without the projector on. That slows things down a bit, et cetera, et cetera. But this demo is out there. You can try it on your browser of choice. It runs faster in some browsers than others. Firefox, by the way, does spectacularly well on this demo, which is great. A lot of good competition in the JavaScript engine arena here. Now, what else do typed arrays do for you? Web workers have been out there for a while. Everybody familiar with web workers? Yes, no? All right. I see a lot of people in the front of the room. That's good. Not so many in the back. I guess all the artists are in the back. So web workers potentially let you do multi-threading on the web, because you can spawn off a worker and it can do stuff completely independently from the main thread, which is running your web app. But there was a problem, which is that every time you want to send data from one side to the other, you have to copy it. That's a rule in the JavaScript language. It's a rule in the web APIs. The algorithm is called structured clone. And you have to basically take all your data and copy it to the other side because of the semantics of the JavaScript language. There's no synchronization and no multi-threading built into the language itself. And obviously this doesn't work if you're trying to make a big model, big 3D model on a worker thread or do physics or something, and you need to send a lot of results back to the main thread for rendering. So we managed to make a tiny modification to the typed array spec and a fairly small modification to the HTML5 spec that gives you the ability to give a big block of data to the worker and then have the worker give it back to you, and then you can give it back to the worker. So you can basically ping-pong large blocks of data between the main thread and web workers. And this fundamentally enables you to use multi-threading on the web. And I'm ashamed to say that I don't have a really cool demo that shows you a factor of four speed-up, but there are demos coming of this. You can check out Eric Beidelman's HTML5 Rocks post that shows you that it's like factor of 50 speed ups if you're downloading large files from the web and processing them on the main thread from this functionality. So that's cool. Another thing that WebGL does for the web is that the API looks very different than many other web APIs. 1 minute. All right. It doesn't look a lot like the Canvas 2D rendering context. It looks like something that lets you build up large batches of geometry and send them down to the graphics card. And that's the way that the hardware works efficiently. So, for example, here's an Jeff Muzilar from Mozilla has a great article that most of you have probably seen about porting the Internet Explorer fish tank demo to WebGL, and it gets like 60 times faster. All right, and here's another example that was derived from JS GameBench. You guys probably saw this one, right? The spaceships exploding sort of thing with meteors. And you can just render a ton of transparent sprites with WebGL if you structure your app in the right way. So you can really begin to take... Let's just see. It's good. Oh. It's good. We're good.
Sorry.
No worries. No worries, dude. You're the man. If you structure your code in the right way, you can really extract all of the available performance of the graphics card on the machine, and that's cool. And web browsers are getting faster, and that's great, but at least you can get at it. You can upload videos and images and canvases into WebGL, and that's great. And what it will mean for the web, by way of my last 15 seconds, the next iteration of the WebGL spec is going to introduce things like resource sharing between contexts, so you can do multi-window or multi-canvas applications where they're both rendering the same view of the same data or different views of the same data. We plan to introduce multi-threading support, so on a web worker you could actually be uploading textures consumed by the main thread. So there's no hiccups at all in hiccuping at all as you begin to load your assets. And I believe also, and this is, I don't know if this is controversial, whether I should even talk about this yet or whether we should get into it later, but I believe that this will be the year of WebGL on mobile devices. You're already beginning to see implementations on smartphones, and I think that more of them are going to come, and that this is going to really mean the ability to write your 3D app once and deploy it to every device out there with no porting at all.
Excellent. Thank you, Ken. So next up, we have Aaron. We switch the screens to number one. There you go.
Great. Thanks a lot. So from the lowest level, the most fundamental aspects of how WebGL works, I get to speak at the opposite end of the spectrum and talk about some of the shiny applications for WebGL. So I work in a group called the Creative Lab at Google, and I lead a very small team called the Data Arts Team. We get to do some pretty fun stuff. One of the things that we work on is a website called Chrome Experiments, which is basically a gallery and showcase of all kinds of fun hacks and demos and cool things that you can do natively in the browser. So there's a bunch of stuff, HTML5 and JavaScript trickery. And lately, we've been adding a bunch more WebGL demos. This is a demo called Google Gravity by Mr. Dube right here, re-envisioning the homepage with physics. But one of the cool things about Chrome Experiments, this is the search terms coming down. One of the cool things about Chrome Experiments is it's also provided a really fun platform for building larger experiments as well. I teamed up with a guy named Chris Milk to make a project called The Wilderness Downtown for Arcade Fire, which is a music video tailored for each individual person. Thanks. So we've been getting to do all kinds of really fun stuff. And when I found out that WebGL was going to be coming out and was going to be stable in Chrome, I really wanted to make something that would help launch it and really show what it was capable of, also to engage programmers and coders and artists, especially designers and people in that realm. I have a background, I studied design media arts at UCLA, and kind of grew up using things like processing and other tools that are more for artists and designers than proper engineers. So I teamed up with Chris Milk again to work on a WebGL project. And he knew Danger Mouse, Daniel Lupi, Jack White, and Nora Jones were coming out with a new Rome album. So we built this Three Dreams of Black interactive experience in WebGL. So you're kind of guiding the music video throughout the whole thing. I'm just going to show a really quick summary of what that experience looks like in case you haven't seen it. Off with a lot of video components, kind of telling the story, setting it up, and then it starts to go into more WebGL activities. So you're now able to use the mouse to guide the camera through these scenes that are being composited real time. And you'll see there are different layers that are being composited together, and then you'll come eventually into these full 3D worlds where it's spawning particles and loading models, creatures running, and you're actually painting your interaction onto the models as you move through the spaces. And then it goes through different scenes, again, with applying different camera motion. And you'll see shader effects that are being applied on top of that, so you're actually transforming bitmaps and all different kinds of fun GLSL experimentation happening. And as you guide yourself through these different worlds, you end up in a world at the end, which consists of different models that are both made by our good friends at Murata and North Kingdom, but also users, so people can build their own voxel-based contributions and put them directly into the experience you're seeing here. And that voxel tool, also built by Mr. Dube, You see it here, just being able to build out and create your own content, pick your own colors, and build things that become part of the experience. So if you go to the website, there's actually a gallery, and you can see a number of the different contributions, things people have put together. And we also created a tech page, which is a pretty important part of the project. So there's a making of video, but more importantly, there's a bunch of tools. There's a model viewer here. So again, you can actually look at the different models. These are the creatures built by Murata. And you can see them being rendered in real time and move around them and investigate them. And there's you can choose whether you want a bear or a dog, or maybe a dog bear halfway, kind of fun stuff. And you can change all the rendering parameters since it's live on the fly. So you can put it into wireframe. You can change your ambient occlusion, play around with a bunch of the different settings. There's a number of different models. And there's also a few demos on there. I think Ricardo's going to talk about some of those demos and about 3JS. So I'll leave that and go to another project that we worked on at the Data Arts team. This is I'm kind of a data viz nut. So one of the first things we did with WebGL was create a WebGL globe. This is showing population data, but there's actually a few different data sets that you can load onto the globe that we've provided, but we also open source the thing. So people are building their own globes and modifying it for their own data sets, which is pretty exciting. It's a nice, nimble way to show geographic data over time and just to create a platform that's open for experimentation. The last project I'm going to mention is a WebGL bookcase that we made, which basically takes an alternative look at the interface for Google Books. So you can browse a selection of Google Books content, and you can, on this gigantic spiral, and you can just start browsing, kind of an alternative to search, but a discovery. And you can pick any individual book, play with it like a model. You can actually click and get that book, both by QR code and by direct link. And you can choose different categories and search and sort. So I think it's nice to think about what new potential interfaces are possible with WebGL. I mean, we're also at Google using it for existing products, things like new Google Maps, which uses WebGL already. I'm pretty excited about it. So with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Doob.
We'll have the video.
Can we switch the cable?
Oh, can I also have the audio? Cable. Thank you.
Spoiler.
Caught in the act of multitasking.
I was just watching Nyan Cat all the time. I think we can see our screen.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. So, after we have seen all this, all what you can do, and all the pretty stuff that you can do, you probably want to... I guess this is an advanced course, or an advanced panel, but it's good to know like some resources of how to start learning WebGL. I would recommend this page, learningwebgl.com, where you have the usual NeHe tutorials, OpenGL tutorials ported to WebGL. And it's a really, really good to get an idea more or less how to start. One of those tutorials, it's this cube, this spinning cube. It basically teaches you how to compose the object and how to load the textures and how to modify it so it looks like spinning. I have the code for that one loaded up here. Like, I don't know. You can see it well there. Yeah. Well. That will do. So this is. I'm not going to run through the code, but this is just to give you an idea of all the code that you need, just for like having that 3D cube spinning with the texture. And just by saying this, you probably have you can imagine that you probably need something on top of this, something like a library or like a framework that it will make you much more easy to do this kind of stuff. So there is some people working on some frameworks or 3D libraries to make this much more easier. I myself am working on one which is called 3.js, which, in instance, this is exactly the same example, the same result, but the code is just basically those lines of code. You have the scene and you have the camera here defined. You know, like I don't want to go like too deep into that. And then you have the geometry, which you want a cube, and then the material that you want to use, and then you use the mesh, and you combine everything, and render the, how you want to render it. And then every time you, every render loop, it will rotate the cube a little bit on the X and the Y, and then it will render the whole scene. Just like an abstraction of just what is called a scene graph. This library is completely open source, and this is something we're working like. So far, we have something like 70 contributors. Like, it's just up on GitHub. This is the page for it. And there are like many examples to get you going and get you an idea how to do like many of the things that you can do with the library. I will show at least one example, like for instance, this one shows a little bit how to do like bump mapping and how to do the lighting and some specular lighting, things like that, in a really kind of simple way. Like, it also have some holes to make your shaders and to be able to, it's not really limited. It has like many options to expand it in many ways, as much as you want. And then I have some examples of like what people is doing with it. Like, there's an instance, this kind of 3D editor, like more or less like a scene composer that you can add cubes and modify all the parameters and things like that. And like an instance, you can add this scene in there, I think. Then there is this, another good example, which we will have to maybe, yeah. A good example of like a, I think this is a Rally 3D engine that is for C, I think, and someone ported it some months ago into JavaScript and 3.js. And it kind of shows the kind of speed that you can get already. Like, it's a little bit ugly, but if you put like nice textures on now, and a much better like 3D world and illumination, you probably can start to see that you can do like really nice 3D games on the web. And of course, there's also, that was the spoiler. And someone had the idea for some reason just have the Nyan Cat that probably everyone knows in 3D. Someone say that now the internet is complete. There's even a special mode, I think, which is used in a kind of magic world. So that's basically a way, like, for all the web developers, it may be a little bit too complex to do WebGL, but these, hopefully, tools like these or libraries like these will help them to get going into that, and whenever they control all these, they will go down and they will do like more like WebGL, raw WebGL. And as a parallel project, I've been working with some guys on this website called GLSL Sandbox, which is the opposite. It's like a way for like graphics developers to go down into WebGL to do like cool stuff that no one understands, only them. So an instance, on this WebGL, you can create a new effect. So what we're seeing here is like we have two polygons in the background, and then the graphics card is running through all the pixels, and it's executing this code that we see on the screen. The nice thing with this is that you can modify the code in real time, and it's going to update right while you're typing. And you can create really, really crazy things. It's a really, you know, it's a really powerful thing of experimenting with 2D effects. And I don't really get to understand too much of all this, but then you can find people that start to do like crazy stuff like this. Like, this is just an apple that is not loading any textures or anything like that. Like, all what you see is being generated by all this code procedurally. Then you can get like people doing landscapes like this, which is, again, it's exactly the same. There is no polygons or anything like that. This is all done in this code. And I think it's a really interesting way to for like all those guys to show all the tricks that they know from the gaming. So we can start to learn, you know, it's a good way of sharing all those tricks. And the last one, yeah. And some people have even like managed to get like some gaming into this framework, which is not really allowed. They do like really crazy tricks, like having all the states like drawing some colors at the bottom of the screen just to say the state of where the everything is. And that's the end of the experimentation part from my side.
Very cool. Very cool. Let's turn it over to Shana. Can we flip the screen back to the other cable? There you go.
All right. So how many people in here have heard of Autodesk? Sometimes known as AutoCAD, but that's not actually the company's name. So we've been doing a lot of work with WebGL. I'm going to take you through a couple of the demos. So we're kind of the, I guess, boring side of this demo, but maybe the more practical side. So the first thing that we've got here is essentially like Google Docs for architects or mechanical engineers. And so you can come in here and upload a document to the cloud and share it with various people, comment on it, pretty common workflow, except that we have some unusual file types, and it wasn't so easy for those to be viewed in web browsers or on mobile devices. So we've been using WebGL to enable the viewing and capturing the data associated with our models, something that has been hugely successful with our customers because they often are sending these models out to a wide variety of people who don't have our software and have to either download or install or buy pretty complicated, sophisticated software to be able to view these models. So WebGL has been pretty cool for us in this pretty simple but meaningful way. So then we've also been doing some work starting to move towards some interesting uses of WebGL in interactive 3D instructions. So many of our parts on the mechanical side need to be assembled or deassembled, and it's not always, you know, think about IKEA furniture, it's not always so obvious how all these pieces fit together and where they're supposed to plug in. So the thought has been for a while, documentation shouldn't just be 2D flat documentation, but it'd be great to be able to see this in 3D and see how all these parts stick together. So we've been building out these 3D interactive instruction sets for things like this Brock tractor and some other pretty cool applications. Even on the consumer side, doing some stuff with Lego. So imagine building out Lego parts and seeing how the whole thing comes together. And then we went and decided, well, you know, most engineers and most architects, they're not going to really spend the time to make their models very pretty. So, you know, in the gaming space, you're going to spend a bunch of time trying to make it pretty, either figuring out the right lighting situations or baking in the textures. But on the architecture side, that's extra work and extra time, and a lot of people don't have the sophistication for that. But we have this pretty cool service called Beast, which does bakes the lighting in the cloud. So you can see us applying it here to the Brock tractor, really making it pop and making it look a lot more realistic. It's a pretty cool service. So then moving towards our kind of mainstream work, we obviously are a company that allows people to edit and create and model. So we've been doing some work on the manufacturing side with modeling using WebGL. So this is a little video demo of some of that work. And so this is a combination of a modeling engine running on our server and the interactivity in the browser on the client side. And then on the new end, probably most people aren't familiar with the work yet, but Autodesk has been moving to the consumer end of the spectrum. You've probably heard of or maybe even own Sketchbook, one of our more successful applications. And we've been doing a lot of things as well in the 3D fabrication and 3D modeling side. So this has gotten squished quite a bit, but I can make it work. So here, this is a new application called 123D Make that lets you come in and select a model of any kind and or import your own model. And it pulls it into these 3D cardboard slices. So it pre-generates this for you. And you can come in and you can you know, play around with the various sizes or the slicing direction if you choose to. And then you can go in and either choose to print out this sheet, the 3D cardboard sheets, and slice it on your own at home, or you can actually go into our store and fabricate this online and have the 3D printed cardboard panels sent back to you where you can assemble it. So kind of connecting that whole pipeline from maker to fabrication. And then kind of one of the, you know, sort of most removed applications of WebGL, you won't even see this really in the 3D space, but we have this service that's doing rendering in the cloud. It's been a widely successful service with our customers, saving something like this model traditionally would have taken like 26 minutes plus rendering locally on the desktop, and it renders in about 10 seconds when you go up to the cloud. So we've been providing this online cloud rendering service. And then on top of that, we've started to use WebGL to allow people to do things like adjust the exposure in real time for these for the small thumbnail views before you download it. So that's most of our applications, just a super quick demo into what we're doing. But Autodesk has really adopted WebGL in a big way. And we've obviously been looking for this kind of solution for a long time. And so we've gotten behind this, looking at this as a new standard in the web and wanting to see this succeed. Clearly, there's lots of challenges. I think we'll touch on them during the panel. And we've been kind of running into and hitting up against almost all of those as we've been commercially trying to send these out the door. And then last thing to note is I've got some giveaways up here, which I think we decided is going to go to the best, is it Twitter or best questions?
Yeah, those nice, crisp questions.
The shortest question?
No.
We've got four giveaways if we include giving away a pre-made one here.
Very cool swag. So we are basically also ready to open it to questions. So we have some good volunteers out there with mics, so feel free to stick up your paw if you want a question. And please introduce yourself and ask your question. And so we've seen some really nice demo, and I do wonder, though, are we pre the killer app of WebGL, or have we seen it yet? What do you guys think? Yeah, Ken.
All right. Well, there are some pretty cool WebGL apps out there today. One of my favorites is called My Robot Nation. Have any of you guys heard of this? Yeah? A few? It's all right. This is a little guide that was made with it. You basically go to their website. You can customize a robot with all different kinds of arms and legs and pose it and paint it, and then it'll be 3D printed and mailed to your door. So similar to making it out of cardboard, this thing is made out of gypsum, I guess, and it's a solid model, and it's multicolored. It's super cool. And I think that's a pretty cool app. These guys are doing pretty well. They're taking the technology in a different direction, I think, than, you know, it took a hard right turn than any of us had expected this to take, because they're bridging to the physical world. But I do think that the killer app hasn't been made yet. There's, I mean, a ton of cool stuff. I was just blown away by the quality and the number of cool shader-based demos that started to come out. I mean, from 3 and other libraries, the minute that the first builds of WebGL were in the browser, and then we kept evolving the API and breaking stuff, and people still kept patching up their demos and keeping them working, which was amazing, too. And now that things have stabilized a bit, it's an easier process, and you're still seeing just an accelerating curve on learning WebGL as more and more links keep cropping up of cool stuff out there. But once things get onto mobile devices, I think there's going to be another cool killer app, or 10, or something like that.
Yeah, it definitely does seem that we're still sort of pre that sort of killer app, like what really would make you like ditch the browser that you're using that didn't have WebGL and go into something else. But it is on a growth curve, so that's very exciting. Any other exciting applications you want to talk about?
I was just going to add, I love the robot painting. That one takes existing robots and allows you to paint with them. Just the other day, Nervous System released this Cell Cycle project, which is worth Googling, which actually allows you to modify the geometry of the object itself and then print jewelry with it, rings and bracelets. And it's super cool to see, you know, a destination website which enables you to manipulate and actually model and then turn that into a real product without any, you know, extra software needed. I think really what the power of WebGL to me is not the graphic software that has largely existed for a long time, but the fact that now it's instantly accessible just via link. And it really changes the way you think and the way you can interact with it, and it kind of closes a bunch of pipelines and enables similar to what we're looking at now.
One thing that was really exciting for me about, I talked to the My Robot Nation guys, and I mean, they started with robots as their first product, but they really think that's a very small version of this like personal manufacturing revolution that a lot of people are talking about, where you can design your own objects from now on and literally just have them printed.
Sorry, can we change my computers.
Can we change the projector cable?
Oh, Colin, could we
switch the cable?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There you go.
To the other, yeah.
There you go.
It's just that you guys can continue speaking and I can show what you're talking about.
Sure, yes, sure.
I was going to say, I do think it is the fabrication side of this. I think as more and more people are getting familiar with 3D printing and the capabilities of 3D printing, and as that becomes more sophisticated, then you're going to want highly accessible 3D tools that allow you to print things out and that are accessible to a much wider type of consumer. So I think these kinds of applications are going to be leading us towards that killer app.
Do we have the mic out to someone who has a question?
Okay.
Yes. Please introduce yourself and ask your question.
Robert Casera, Unity Shard and Tableau Software. I ask a negative question first, so maybe that then we can get on to the more positive things. There was this controversy a while ago about, I think, Microsoft saying that you can't implement WebGL safely in the browser without making it wide open for attack. Where are we with that? Is it still a concern? Is it a concern? And where do you see this kind of going?
Ken, security issues?
Yes. Okay. So the WebGL API and the shading language, the way that the specification is written, it is impossible for a WebGL application to either access, to read or write memory that it's not supposed to be able to. Okay, this has been well documented. We shook a lot of bugs out in the specification, as a matter of fact. So when it comes to thinking about whether a WebGL app could take over your machine because it can do out-of-bounds memory reads or writes, it's not possible. Okay, if it is possible, it's simply a bug and it just needs to be fixed. Now, there's a different question about denial of service and robustness of implementations. It is definitely technically possible for a WebGL application to download JavaScript that renders a massive, you know, super large model with a very expensive shader, and your graphics card will just choke on it. And this has been a problem in the graphics industry for a really long time. But as a matter of fact, Microsoft has some of the best robustness architecture built into the operating system today, where if you do such an operation, the screen might hitch for a couple of seconds, and then it'll go black, and then it'll come back and say the graphics driver was restarted. And you can listen for that event in your application, and you can respond to it. And for example, Chrome, the WebGL implementation does listen for these events, and it kills the WebGL context. We need to build a little bit more infrastructure in the browsers to forbid like a domain, you know, foo.com, from repeatedly creating WebGL contexts and doing the same thing over and over again. This is not, I mean, I'll take the personal blame for that, you know, robustness not being in there. But the primitives are there on some operating systems. All of the graphics card manufacturers on desktop and mobile are firmly behind the addition of extensions to the OpenGL API to allow you to detect and respond to these graphics reset operations. And I'm really super optimistic that, again, this year will be the year of GLR robustness and GLEXT robustness, meaning that that kill switch will be there and it'll be in the WebGL implementations and browsers. And that's the last thing that is needed for robust deployment of WebGL everywhere.
It is an interesting question, right? Because obviously if the power is this frictionless access to the content, then you really need it to be like everywhere the user might ask for your content. So, sure. I mean, the browser penetration right now, landscape has some issues, of course, prominently on the desktop. You're not seeing it on Internet Explorer. Microsoft has not said anything about this. They've been, you know, I don't know. They've just not said anything.
Actually, can I just point out one interesting fact?
Sure.
A fact is that Internet Explorer 10 platform preview, I think it was 2, introduced support for typed arrays, which is the lowest level API that WebGL is built on. Okay, that was very interesting because you got to think, well, what use is it on the web today, if not for using WebGL? And they showed some really cool examples of like downloading a JPEG with XML HTTP request and then having a hex editor where they would show you the bytes of the JPEG. And that is a thrilling web application if I ever saw one, but perhaps not the most visually impressive. So who knows what's going to happen?
Let's take another question. Is there another mic out to a question? Yep.
Hi, my name is Eric Moller. I work on WebGL and Opera. So you're making a game, you know, if you're lucky, you're targeting consoles because then you know exactly what your hardware is. And then the next step up is maybe iOS, and the worst is PC. Now we've got another worst, which is WebGL. So what can we, or should we do anything as browser vendors to alleviate that problem for developers? And in that case, what should we do?
Can you just also quickly tell us what's the status of WebGL in Opera, both desktop and mobile?
Okay, it's just recently released on Opera Mobile 12, and desktop is still in our next build.
Cool.
I'm sorry, but could you clarify the question a bit? I really don't understand the problem.
Yeah, so the question is, like, WebGL is targeting a really wide range of devices, and the performance is going to vary widely. So should we do? What can we do to help developers, you know, write applications that work on the widest range of devices?
Yeah, I think that's for you, Ken.
All right. So you're right. It's a hard problem. So Opera Mobile 12 is great. I've got it installed on my Galaxy Nexus, and it runs a lot of WebGL content. There's very little stuff that I've found out there that just flat out doesn't work. And it's not due to, you know, Opera's WebGL implementation necessarily, but due to the application, maybe make some incorrect assumptions. Now, 2 points. The WebGL spec was designed to expose the functionality that's on the mobile hardware. Okay, so it even takes the desktop functionality, you know, DirectX 10, 11, whatever, and it's kind of a least common denominator. So at some level, you're guaranteed that your content is going to run to some degree, unless you're making incorrect assumptions about, you know, whether you have Vertex Texture Fetch or something available, which may not be there on all devices, but you can query for its presence. Now, the question of performance is a good one, and it's something that is still, we're still trying to figure out what to do. Obviously, it's a bad idea if every WebGL application out there has to say, what graphics chip am I running on right now? And, oh yeah, I know how fast or how slow that is, so I've got this massive database of graphics chips, and I know this one's pretty slow, so I'm going to, you know, scale down all my models and download the low-resolution textures and stuff like that. That would be an unmitigated disaster in terms of application development. So in addition to that reason, for privacy reasons, which were insurmountable, you can't actually find out what graphics chip you're running on when you're writing a WebGL app. So what you kind of need to do is, today, try your app for a few frames and see how quickly it's running. And if it's not running quickly, you got to scale it down. This is required because the mobile chips are like a tenth the speed of the chips that you're going to see on the desktop, even though they may have the same functionality. Going forward, what we're hoping to do is to expose some performance metrics of the WebGL implementation as it's running in the browser to the application. This is being discussed in the working group. We would value yours and everybody's input on this. Windows has the Windows Experience Index, if I'm remembering that correctly, and that Microsoft trusts that enough, those numbers coming back from the graphics card enough, to determine whether or not to enable Aero. And I think that we could probably come up with a cross-platform benchmark that was built into each browser that if those numbers were exposed, you could look at them before trying your app, before starting your application, and say, oh, this is kind of a low-powered machine, so I'm going to use lower resolution models.
Cool. Let's move on. Next question.
Hi.
Do you have
something? Well, I just had...
Sorry about that. I just have a quick thing to say. Like, it's probably obvious, but a good thing to solve this will be like by starting doing the code for the mobile and then the desktop. Like right now, I see like many people that is a little bit disappointed because they have WebGL apps that are like on the desktop and they don't run as fast on mobile. But obviously, you need to first target the slow ones and then go up.
That's a great point. Let's take another question.
Hi, this is Luz Caballero from Opera Software. And my question is, the WebGL API was created based on OpenGL, but WebGL is a web technology, so you can expect that a lot of people will be using libraries to create WebGL. And this leaves cross-browser interoperability and performance a lot up to the people who create these WebGL libraries instead of just up to the standard to the vendors implemented the standard. So I wanted to know what your thoughts are on this. Maybe it's a Ken and Mr. Duke question.
How about you, Duke?
Can you say the question again in a short
time? What I said is that having the WebGL API based on OpenGL and WebGL being a web technology means that a lot of people will be creating WebGL applications using libraries. Uh-huh. And because of this, cross-browser interoperability and performance is dependent on the people who create these WebGL libraries and how they create them. So especially in mobile, where that may make a bigger difference. So if you have any thoughts on this.
So basically some reflections for you as a library developer.
It's just really not really, I mean, there is some bottlenecks, obviously on JavaScript, but it's just finding the balance, because you don't want to expose the type array directly to the user to be able to modify it, so it's really fast. But there are many libraries. You want to have something like that. There are like many libraries like TDL from Greg Tavares and LightGL. But I see your point. Like there is using libraries like 3.js, which makes it a little bit easier to handle, but maybe a little bit slower in some points. It can be a little bit of a problem on mobile. But yeah, we are starting right now. The guy that is doing the WebGL is receiving a proper phone that he can try stuff. So we'll be working on that.
This one of the demos, your shader demos, had the code right there, and 3.js is open source. Like, what do people think about the role of sort of view source and open source for, you know, the proliferation of this stuff?
It's a little bit related to that, but one of the good things that I see from WebGL at this point is that we are free to do any tool that we want. We don't depend on any application out there from any company. Like if it wasn't on Flash, we would have to use Adobe products to be able to create that. Now with open source, you can create, with WebGL, it's everything is open source. You can create your own tools and you can share it and people can build on top of that. And I think the speed of development that we are having is a lot. It's really, really quick because of this. But yeah.
Very cool. So it seems like WebGL is being built in a web way.
In a sense.
Yeah, very cool. Any other questions? Do we have a mic? Yes, please introduce yourself.
Yeah, how's it going? My name is Mike Taylor.
Can you speak up, please?
Yes.
Good.
I'd never really thought about WebGL in the context of web applications. To me, it was always games and really...
Please just keep it firm. Sorry, we've talked a lot about this. Just please ask your question.
Yes. What is the accessibility story for WebGL? How can I create interactive experiences building a model and have users who are not sighted, perhaps, or able to use a mouse?
How does WebGL relate to accessibility issue, which is a big part of HTML5, right?
Yeah, no, this is a really good question. So, Canvas itself has had, as it turns out, and I'm only new to the discussion, a long history toward getting accessible. I went actually to the Accessible HTML5 Canvas panel earlier in later last week, and had a nice discussion with the folks there, and plan to have more. Long and the short of it is this: for keyboard input, you can already do it in your WebGL application. You can tab between the portions of your model and, you know, make the arrow keys work for expanding, you know, things along different axes. When it comes to mouse interaction, and you know, if you hover over a piece of the 3D model and you want the screen reader to be able to tell you what that is, the solutions that are being developed for 2D Canvas ought to work for WebGL as well. But we are in discussions with them to make sure that you can actually, for example, dynamically generate the DOM subtree, which is the accessibility tree. And you just have a little region around the mouse pointer that's tracking your motion. And so you're hovering over a portion of the model and you make the DOM node that represents the portion of the model, because it's only the WebGL application that knows what's under the mouse. So you have to leave it up to the application. It's a little bit different than when you're constructing a fixed 2D scene graph and trying to make that accessible. But I believe that the same solutions apply.
I also want to bring Aaron and Shana into this. I think both of you guys represent like some of the most exciting users of WebGL out there from very different viewpoints. Like, I mean, people out there thinking right now, is WebGL for you guys a realistic choice for a high-end application developer? I mean, you talked about some problems that have been, like, what are your views on this, having sort of been out there and tried it on yourself?
Well, for us, I think we're quickly hitting the limits right now. But that said, we ask ourselves the question of what are we trying to use the browser for? So when we're thinking about, you know, what's most useful in displaying and interacting in 3D, it is much more for the masses, for the people who generally don't use the hardcore 3D modeling technologies. So, you know, we're sort of striking this balance between how difficult or how excessive the application we're building actually needs to be and WebGL's capabilities. So it's kind of actually a, in some ways, a good limiting balance for us right now.
Okay. Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been getting constantly better and better. When we first were putting together Rome, there were literally no higher level libraries for building anything. So Ricardo was, instrumental in creating three that we used for most of the projects. And there's, as he mentioned, a number of other projects processing .js, a number of options for creating higher level content. And I think both at that level and at the lower level, I think it's getting more stable and more secure and more widely supported and more realistic every day.
At the same time, your sort of phrasing also indicates it's a process. It's going to a place and it may not be sort of totally there yet in every way.
I mean, you could say that about, I think, everything on the internet.
So fair point.
Yeah, but I think it's it is getting much, much better and much wider and more well supported.
Very cool. There was a question over there.
Hi, my name is Marcel Barraza. We have a web application for commercial real estate. And I wonder if you know, guys, is there any API to upload or handle DWG files, the AutoCAD files, for blueprints or for all that stuff?
That's you, Shana,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. So the service I just showed, you can upload DWG, DWF, soon to be several other file formats, and they're all viewable. We use SVG and WebGL for viewing. And then also another piece that's pretty cool on the commercial real estate side, I didn't show it on the rendering service, but we enable you to render out a 3D panorama as well that you can embed within your site. So kind of Google Street View-like views within your buildings.
We have a question from Twitter from Brian Dillon, and I think this is pretty interesting. When will this be easy enough for a designer to use? I mean, you know, some of your stuff with the shader stuff really sort of speaks to this, but you're still sort of writing code. Like, when are you, like, you know, how far up the stack is this thing moving, in your opinion? Because you yourself is not sort of a low-level guy at all, right?
Yeah. We do have some limitations on the browsers right now about... Like the idea that I would like to have to write the tooling right in JavaScript and HTML5, but there are some limitations that whenever you create an application in the browser, you cannot really have access to the file system. So hopefully stuff like that will be available at some point. But now we are starting to finish the API a little bit on the library. So I think now we will start to build a tools on top of that that people will be able to use without having to deal with code. But I don't know, maybe another year, I think.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I don't consider myself to be a particularly spectacular programmer, but I've been able to like churn through three as it is now, and I think Ricardo's working on documentation, which is going to be instrumental. But also for designers, you can already open the existing version of processing, and you can choose an exporter which goes straight to WebGL content. So instead of just exporting your processing sketches to processing applets, you can already send them to WebGL, and that might be an easier solution for folks that are more designer-oriented.
Very cool. Ken, you had a demo you wanted to show?
Oh, sure. Let me just toss this out. I was fortunate to have an intern last summer who worked on a Chrome extension, and the reason that this functionality can't be added to the HTML5 API is that it's actually security sensitive. We can talk about why exactly offline. But Firefox has a similar API, similar extension API, and this thing lets you embed web pages in 3D. All right, so this is a book, and all of the pages are actually live.
There's a Yo Dog meme in here somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Even WebGL in WebGL works, which is very meta. That's awesome. You can see the bones. Whoa, it's creepy.
Come on, Twitter, you can do it.
Yeah. So, I'm really excited about seeing this kind of functionality become available because it really closes the loop on what you can do with the web page and then in 3D and then back in the web page. And that is a little bit missing today in the API where you're kind of limited to a canvas and sure you can bring a limited amount of stuff in from the surrounding web page in the form of images and videos. But, you know, can you really do super sophisticated rendering? Could you do beautiful text, you know, in 3D if you wanted to or needed to for your design? And I'm optimistic that these kind of capabilities are going to come to the web platform in general, and I'm interested in looking into that.
I think your optimism makes us all optimism. If anyone, the guy who knows the nitty gritty here. Have we got another question out there? Yeah, someone has a mic.
I've got a question. My name is Kelly Hoskins, and I was
please speak up, sir.
I said my name is Kelly Hoskins, and my question is related to authoring. You sort of answered it already. What authoring software is there to create complex data sets to export them in a way that, you know, WebGL can then manipulate and display?
So are you're talking about the 3D content itself or code or?
The content, like would I use Maya to create, a troll?
So basically, can you export to WebGL from 3D packages, Shana?
Yeah, so most of our software can be used to create the 3D models. I think the biggest challenge is, depending on what technology you're going to be viewing it with, you have to pare down and be careful about the model size. We're working all right now on some technology around some pretty sophisticated large model viewing as well. So yes, I'd recommend checking out, especially, I don't know what end of the spectrum you're on, but we're doing some stuff in WebGL itself and then to traditional desktop modeling solutions work as well.
Dude, but I've also seen that in 3JS, your guys are working on pipeline issues.
Yeah, usually the libraries, they try to have some exporters from different programs like Cinema 4D or 3D Season Max or Blender. And one of the formats that if you use exporters, you can also use Colada, which is a format they try to, even if it's a format that is usually for like sharing like between programs, it's not really for web. They usually load Colada files and other like familiar browsers right in the code directly. You don't have to do anything or export anything.
So it's, a bottom line is also it's kind of a separate concern in some ways. Like the 3D formats out there exist from which you can get to WebGL, and WebGL plugs seamlessly into any existing sort of paradigm for that. Mm-hmm. So I think we can have one more short question. Do we have a mic out?
My name is Eric. Along these lines that the guy over there and this person, I'm a big 3D Studio Max user, and I have lots of scenes I can render videos. Is it possible, or in the near future, to export all of these, kind of the Autodesk, AutoCAD do, but for WebGL on gamings, for example?
So basically, can you move your assets onto a WebGL environment for showing on the web?
For 3D Studio Max, yes.
For 3D Studio Max. Yeah, I believe that was sort of touched on in the last question. The answer is yes. Like the Colada and other forms exist for this. Let's take another quick question. Yes. Guy with a mic. You got time, my friend. Let's go. Okay, let's do it.
I'm Chuck Fletcher, and was curious if any word from the Apple developers on mobile Safari support. Nothing.
So, none of us can comment officially, right, but the code is in there, and you can actually do WebGL from iAds, and the reason that you can't do it from general web content is because Apple has the same concerns about locking up phones that the rest of us do. But we are working, all of us collectively, including the graphics chip manufacturers, are working to solve that problem. And I'm optimistic that it will be solved.
Ken, just quickly sort of looking ahead, like what's next for the spec, like for people out there, like what's on your sort of radar for improvements to the state of WebGL?
Well, I touched on that before. Multi-context, multi-threading, more robustness. Robustness is not really a spec issue, it's an implementation issue, stuff like this.
Very cool. So I think that actually sort of takes us to around the top of the hour. So thank you so much for your question. Thank you for the crispness. I think you guys did a fabulous job of that. Thank you very much. We didn't have to get stressed out.